call to order the K-12 Finance Committee meeting February 27, 2007. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of Thursday, February 22, 2007?
I so move.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Representative Koonin, comprehensive school reform funding provided to replace federal funds. And I'll move House File 975 for consideration and to be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance. Representative Koonin.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill also has an open appropriation on the line 1.18. I would like to have make an oral amendment to fill in that blank with 2.1 million.
Representative Koonin, could you give me that amount one more time, please?
2.1 million.
Representative Koonin moves an oral amendment to insert. Would someone like to move Representative Koonin's amendment?
So moved.
Representative Brown? All in favor of Representative Koonin's amendment to insert 2.1 million in line 1.18, to say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Koonin.
Okay, thank you. That's a little less than the fiscal note states, but I'm not quite sure where that number come from. But if you took the number of schools participating and multiplied it by the amount of the grant they could get, that's what we come up with, is 2.1 million. So that's where that's at. To start with, I would like to ask Mr. Dwayne Strand from Yellow Medicine East, he's superintendent there, to come up and speak about what the program is about and give some details on that, and also there will be a few other testifiers too to follow. So,
Superintendent Strand. And Superintendent, if you'd introduce yourself for the tape and then begin your testimony.
I'm going to turn off my phone. Dwayne Strand, Superintendent of Schools from the Yellow Medicine East School District. It's a district that is located in South Central, Southwest Minnesota, serving seven small rural communities. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Finance Division Committee. On behalf of the 05-06 CSR schools, we extend our thanks for this opportunity to be here before you today. What I'd like to do is just to take a couple minutes to tell you a little bit about what CSR means, what that program is, and how the funding came about to be for the districts that are represented. We do have a number of districts. The CSR schools from 2005-2006, there were 21 schools that received funding, federal dollars through the Minnesota Department of Education. We do have a number of districts that are represented here today, and they include Red Lake, Ogilvie, Shakopee, Boston, Richfield, Redwood Falls, and in the Yellow Medicine East School District. What I'd like to do is just give you a little bit of background, and then a couple of the other, actually they all came today and they would have loved to address you, but we realized the time element that you have too, so we have tried to cut that back. We do plan, however, to end with a third grade student who will share a story with you who really culminates what CSR is all about, in that it really helps to make schools change, input systematic changes into schools that really improve student improvement. And so she improved her academics, so she really is where we want to actually end up with the reform models that we are trying to put into place. Comprehensive school reform is commonly referred to as CSR, and it's a systematic approach to improvement that focuses on reorganizing and revitalizing entire schools. It uses scientifically based comprehensive models for school-wide change that are supported by expert trainers and facilitators as the districts are moving through the process. That includes challenging academic standards, strong professional development components, and meaningful parent and community support, which are all really three of the strengths of the CSR model. The first CSR grants were appropriated by the federal government back in 1998. And the purpose was to provide funding to schools to jumpstart comprehensive school-wide improvements that covered virtually all aspects of the school operation, rather than looking at piecemeal programs and individual reforms. CSR programs funds were not intended to support separate projects that were added on, but to look at the whole school and how you operate. Rather, the funds were allocated to help schools improve their entire operations, and we were able to choose from a variety of models that fit our unique needs within our district, as long as the model that we choose would meet the 11 criteria of the program. And I'm not going to highlight all of the 11 models, but really the ones that were strongly influenced school change really deal with improving methods and strategies that are based on scientifically based research. And the other really key component is to provide for staff high-quality professional development that is ongoing over time, so that teachers are continually trained and being updated in the research methods. The CSR projects are all supported by schools. Schools have to have a buy-in, and so the schools vote on whether they're going to move forward with the project. The 21 schools today seeking additional funding have all that buy-in from their staff. All had initial funding in the year 2005-2006, and are looking for funding for now the third year to continue that process. As I stated, back in 2005-06, we were all awarded a $100,000 grant. It was a competitive grant, an incentive grant by the Minnesota Department of Education. The grants were originally awarded to us with the fact that we would be able to renew those grants at that same funding level for the next 2 years. Unfortunately, prior to the granting of the second renewal, schools were informed that there was no more funding that would exist for those projects. After some work with the Department of Education, we were able to find partial funding for last year. For the elementary in each district, that meant about $50,000. We were able to rearrange our budgets for a number of things so that we could continue that third year, knowing that within the third year we were going to then come back and try to somehow find additional funding, or the projects would not be able to continue. Truly, all of us believe that we are doing what is in the best interest of our students. We, like all schools here today, recognize that we do have tight budgets to work with. But we also understand that in order for these projects to be completed, we will need at each district level about $100,000. We also have an understanding that schools in other states did continue to receive CSR funding after the first year, and we're not sure necessarily why that was true, but within the state of Minnesota that wasn't true, and our funding was reduced for the second year and now cut for the third year, and thus our request for House File 975. A couple of things that I'd like to really leave you with is the fact that it is important to remember that the grants were given to schools who had submitted applications implementing a systematic approach to school improvement. The culture of a school or any organization is defined as the consistent, the predictable, the habitual habits demonstrated by the majority of people the majority of time. The CSR grants were to provide over a three-year period of time an opportunity for us to assist schools in their efforts to continue to define new, consistent, predictable, habitual behaviors that have been found to significantly improve the academic achievement of students. This shift in thought and teaching strategies can only be accomplished by providing staff with ongoing, high-quality staff development. The components of the CSR grant, especially those that relate to professional development, are truly not unlike the components of both the No Child Left Behind goals and really the QCOMP initiatives that the governor has put into place, all focused on improving student learning and achievement. If you were to visit the website of the Minnesota Department of Education, you would also find that they have information on their website that shows that schools have been a part of the CSR schools, have made great strides in the improvement of academic achievement. So that those statistics are out there, and they do show that this process has worked for many school districts who have completed the three-year cycle. All of the districts represented here today have been working for a number of years to lay the groundwork for their own systemic change. Truly, we didn't start 3 years ago. For many of us, for example, Yellow Medicine East, we started back in 1995, really laying the groundwork for a strong literacy program that really addressed the reading needs of all students. All of us have taken many steps to reorganize how we do school with respect to the CSR model that we selected. The CSR grants awarded back in 2005-2006 provided the majority of us with the needed funding to take that initial step to training all staff so that we could move forward with the implementation of this program change. Truly, without continued funding for the final year, it may be unlikely that many of us will be able to bring this change to fruition. And really, in the short period of time today, it's hard for any of us to do justice to the great programs that we have put into place. But I think what we would like to demonstrate to you is that we do all have a strong commitment to improving the education for all of our children, and we can only do that by changing how we do school, and we recognize that as an important piece of the CSR process. So with that, I would like to turn it over to a couple of our other presenters, and then we'll move
on. Representative Coonan, you have other testifiers?
Yes, but I'm not sure who's coming up yet here. So.
Ramona from Red Lake.
Thank you.
Ms. Gellert, if you just introduce yourself for the tape, and then we welcome your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Ramona Gellert. I am the Panema School Principal, part of Red Lake District Number 38. I took over in Panema 5 years ago, and at that time we were at the bottom of the scoring as far as adequate yearly progress was concerned in the state. And we made a decision to make systematic changes, school-wide changes. And we began that process in 02-03 with a survey where we pinpointed the areas that we most needed to change. We began with disciplinary referrals, wanting to reduce those, having students spend more time in class, looking at our reading program to see what was working, what wasn't working, and taking a serious look at mathematics. In 03-04, we instituted some change and we made some real gains and some gains, but we weren't doing enough. So we took another look again, and then in 04-05, when the CSR grant application came available to us, we took a serious look again at our surveys. We tested in 04-05, and we made significant gains, but we didn't feel like it was enough. And we were looking at systematic change throughout the whole process. When the grant came through, we were ecstatic. It allowed us to put into place and highlight another component. The first component we had put in on our own through district funding was Responsive Classroom, which is a research-based program for disciplinary ways to deal with discipline and student growth and achievement within the school. We had great success with that. We reduced our suspensions to, I think we went down to 5 that first year, all year, and we had less than half of student referrals that required in-school suspension. We then looked at reading. We were an SFA reading school, which is a research-based model, but we took a serious look at whether it was really encouraging our students to be good readers. And what we found out through parent surveys and through student information was that our kids had over a series of several years begun to actually hate reading. We felt that that was no way to teach reading, so we began looking at other programs that would assist us. And guided reading came to the forefront. We looked at Bruce Vento, and we looked at their model and what they had done, and we saw that they had made big progress and that they were a school with similar economic disadvantages and minority percentages, even though the minorities were not similar. Our first step in the CSR grant was to partner with Bruce Vento, and we took our teachers down to Bruce Vento, and they observed teaching. We literally hired their literacy coach to come up and help train our teachers in how to do guided reading, and we spent a big chunk of money on buying all new reading materials, leveled reading materials for our students. We found that our students, once they got used to reading and wanting to read, now they didn't have anything to read. So we begged, borrowed, and did everything we could to get as much reading material into their hands at their level that we could. We also did some training, began training in cognitive guided math instruction with Dr. Judith Hankus out of the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. And she has done significant research that shows that cognitive guided instruction is one of the best ways to teach Native students math. And it's a methodology, not a curriculum. So we trained some teachers and we wanted to carry that on, which the CSR grant allowed us to do. We actually brought her to Red Lake and had her train our teachers, a group of 15. So we used the money for that. We were really ready to test in 05. Our kids were excited. They had been prepping. We had test data that showed that we had made significant growth. We were really ready. And then March 21st happened. And it changed our world. We were exempt from testing that year because of the shooting. And we lost 6 weeks of schooling. Actually, even after we came back, we lost the rest of the year. There was very little actual education going on. However, we fell back on what we knew. Responsive classroom was a way to give children security, and it gave them that. It brought them back into school feeling safe. They trusted their teachers. Guided reading gave us a way to find materials at their level that would help them deal with their grief. We really drew on what we knew, and we managed to make it through the school year. We were entering into the 06-07 school year, starting to heal, getting excited again, having gone through another round of training, really stretching those dollars as far as we could to make as much use of it as we could. One of our fifth grade students committed suicide, which threw us into a loop again, starting school in the fall. But we persevered, and we started out again. And when we tested, we were ready. In spite of losing, well, they lost all of March, April, and May, basically 3 months of school the previous year, our students showed significant growth. And in our school, which happens to be the only school in the district, we actually made adequate yearly progress. And while we didn't quite meet the standard goals, we did meet our target goals across all areas, which is significant. It was the first time Panema had ever done that. This money has just been a boon to us. It has forced us to do a 3-year plan. Our plan last year, which we put into place through budgeting our dollars very carefully and actually having trainings at people's homes so we wouldn't have to rent facilities, we were able to get the training in for Writer's Workshop, which will, again, help our students as they start taking those tests because there's a significant writing portion on the math test. So they were ready for testing again this year, and we're excited. Our students, for the first time in several years, are really setting their own personal goals, and they're charting their growth, and they know where they're at, and they're excited about showing everybody in the state what they can do. And a lot of that credit goes to the staff who have dedicated themselves to using this money. Not a penny of it has gone to waste. We scrimp and save and we do everything we can to make sure that we use every bit of it to its most, so it helps us the most. Our third year plan is to get ahead of the curve and look at science as the science standards are coming out. We mapped our math curriculum, we mapped our reading curriculum, and now we would like to look at mapping our science and training our teachers in science as we're getting ready for the science test. Panema's success is based on the fact that we've had Cheryl Nash, who's been an advisor through Minnesota Department of Ed, and she's kept us informed of what's coming up and what's new and what's expected. And we have worked very hard to be ahead of the curve, and we hope to continue to do so. As you may be aware, the Red Lake District is, well, Panema pulled itself out, the rest of the district went in. Attendance has been a serious issue, and it's one that we're going to struggle with for a while because of the shootings. And graduation rates have plummeted. So those are some serious things that the rest of the district is looking at. And they're using our school, actually, as a model for reform throughout the district. So we've been able to form committees and help with that throughout the district. So this money didn't just help Panema. It's really expanded, and it's helping others. And so that is basically the story of PNEMA in a nutshell. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, Principal Gary, before we turn that, just hopefully you'll know that yourself, your staff, your students, and your community are certainly in the hearts of all the community members here, and especially given the occurrences in the last couple of years, please know that your achievements are all the more remarkable. So please hope that you'll take that message back.
Thank you.
Other questions for Principal Gaylord? Representative Kuhn, do you have another testifier?
Yeah, we're putting this together on the fly, so okay. I'm not sure, but... Two more for sure. We're finishing up with a third grade student. So.
Wonderful. Thank you. If you'd please introduce yourself, sir, and then begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Joey Page, principal at Sheridan Hills Elementary School in Richfield. And I thank you for your time this afternoon. And I won't take up too much of your time because I know we want to hear the students speak. And the two speakers before me have done a nice job of talking about CSR. I'd like to talk a little bit in brief just about the CSR funds in general and what it's done for our school. We've really developed as a staff responding to the needs of our students in an era of great accountability in today's educational environment. It demands the best from our teachers so our students can achieve. And our CSR grant that we've had for the first year this year has done that. We are responding to the needs of our students. We are developing our teachers to respond in an era of greater accountability. The schools that were awarded CSR grants are all part of a change process that they have believed in as a community, as a staff, and supported by the boards of education from where they are represented from. And we are committed to supporting the learning needs of our students. This is an opportunity through these dollars that allows us to do that. And I'll close with that the predicament, the dilemma that we are in, the CSR schools, is not Minnesota's fault at all. But we are Minnesota schools. These are Minnesota students, and these are Minnesota teachers. And we appreciate any support that you would have. Thank you.
Committee members, if you have any questions for Principal Page. Representative Dent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Principal Page, this was you've had this grant for 1 year, is that right?
No, this is our second year with the grant.
This would be the second year? You get 2 years from the feds or one?
Pardon me?
You get 2 years from the federal government?
We've had one full year in 2005-2006.
Okay.
And this year was funded at 50% of that.
Yes, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my question is, did you expect this to be ongoing revenue for the foreseeable future, or was this put together as kind of a one-time program? Did you expect it to be one-time money? Did you expect it to be ongoing?
For the duration of the grant, I don't think there was any doubt that the schools knew that this was a three-year grant, but when RFPs were solicited, there wasn't anything else on the horizon as far as how tenuous the funding would be. So it's a surprise to us. In districts where funding is tight, we have limited budgets. We have other needs in our buildings that dollars are tied to, and this compounds that.
Any other committee members? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. More of a comment than anything, but I hope committee members see the wisdom in this legislation in relationship to all of the time we spent on the achievement gap. Of all of the things that I've seen so far, this is something that can really get us in a proactive way addressing what we all have agreed is one of our goals here this session. So I want to thank Representative Cronin for his bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Principal Page. And Representative Kuhn, I understand you have a special testifier to come up.
you would introduce yourself into the microphone, please.
My name is Jordan Hins, and I am going to read The Fight for the Open Spot by Mrs. Klom's class, February 22nd, 2007.
Could I address?
And please introduce yourself as well.
I'm Stacey Hins. I'm the elementary principal at Yellow Meadows East, and she's my daughter. I'm more nervous than she is. Can you believe it? I had this really cool thing written up to talk to you about, but as I was sitting there, I thought, this is what you need to hear. She is truly what we're all about, that we know that school reform is long-term commitment, and we hope that you would fund the final year of our school reform projects for the 21 districts involved. She's going to read a Cinderella story, but a version that you haven't heard. Her story shows what type of work can come from children that are truly affected by total school reform.
Jordan, go ahead and tell us your story nice and loud.
The Fight for the Open Spot by Mrs. Klom's class, February 22nd, 2007. On the first day of spring training, Lena and her two sisters went down to Richter Field to try out for the Kilowatts. There is an open spot on the team. Lena has been practicing all year. She really, really, really wants to make the team. She is a tomboy and loves baseball. Her sisters, Tina and Gina, only want to make the team so they can be around Oli. Oli is the famous Kilowatt pitcher. When the girls arrived at the field, all the other players are boys, and the boys are pretty curious. They don't want girls to be on their team. Coach Richter and Oli were in the middle of a conversation when Tina and Gina overheard Oli say, "How whoever can hit a home run will be on the team, and I will plan on asking her to go to the front." After everyone warms up, Oli said, "Batter up." Tina was up to bat first. She swung too early, hit the lower half of the ball, and the ball popped and dropped into Oli's glove. She is not going to make the team or be Oli's safe for the prop. Gina was up next. She swung too late and missed the ball. Strike one. Next pitch, Gina hit the ball fast. The ball passed the second base. The second baseman picked it up and threw it to third base. Gina was out by a mile. Gina isn't that fast. She should have stayed at second base. She is not going to make the team or be Oli safe for the prom. Finally, Lena came up to the plate. Oli pitched the ball as fast as lightning. Lena took a swing. The bat turned silver and maroon. The bat sparkled in the morning sun. The ball kissed the bat and flew out of the ballpark, and then the ball dove into the river. Oli skipped over to home plate and waited for Lena to run across the plate. "Good job," exclaimed Oli. "You made the team." "Do you want to go to the prom?" they asked each other at the same time. "My brother, Steven, can drive us in his new Chevy pickup," Oli said excitedly. Lena replied, "Yes." Meanwhile, Gina and Tina are wandering the riverbanks, looking for the baseball. They could be heard saying, "It should have been us."
Jordan, that's the best Oli Lena story I've ever heard. Members of the committee, any questions for either Jordan or Principal Hines? Well, thank you very much. Thank you. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Is that the end of the test of right now? Is there any public testimony on this House file? And I ask members of the committee, do you have any questions for Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coonan, I noticed that there's a difference between the fiscal note list and the CSR first year funds list of schools. Is that a mistake, or are some of the schools not seeking to use the CSR?
Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative. The amount 2.1 million is the 21 schools times the grant amount of $100,000. Just exactly where the fiscal note comes up with their numbers, I'm not real sure, but that's how we come to the number.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative.
Representative Cunningham, so the cost is not $3.361 million?
No.
Representative Cunningham.
But, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, that's right. In fact, the verbal amendment is on line 1.18, $2.1 million.
Okay.
Representative Erickson, I should know we amended the bill at the outset.
Right, amen. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cunningham, this is one-time money. So do you know what the school districts or school sites plan to do after that?
Representative Cunningham.
Maybe I need to have one of the school representatives come up and answer that, except that when they applied for the grants, they knew it was a three-year grant in the beginning, except that the funding was canceled toward the end of the grant program. I don't know if you want to hear an answer from one of the testifiers or...
Mm-hmm. Perhaps Superintendent Strand?
Basically, over the three-year period, the majority of the funds really will be used for training. And so it's hoped that by the end of the third year, most of that training will have been completed. There will always be ongoing training in that as we have new teachers and new staff. But the initial bulk of the cost of many of our grants was to do that initial training, and that will be completed at the third year of the period. If there are positions that are associated with that, they will then become district expenses, and we'll carry on with those things. And we'll use other title funds to continue, for example, Title II funds to continue to train teachers with the models that we've selected.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. What reforms must be proposed to get the money?
Superintendent Strand?
There are 21 different models that schools can choose from. For example, the project that we're working on is the Literacy Club out of Ohio State University. There are other projects, I don't know the names of all of them, but so they're all scientifically based approaches to school reform that schools then study. Initially, we do studies of the different reforms and look at what reforms reflect the goals of our school districts or the goals of the individual buildings. So there you can choose from a variety of them that fit.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Superintendent Strander, are there other folks who didn't testify today that you'd like to introduce?
I will let them kind of stand up and do that if you'd like. We'll start with Shakopee.
Wonderful, thank you.
Hi, I'm
Nathan. I'm a third grade teacher. Hello. Anybody else? We have a number of Shakopee people here. So.
Thank you.
Ogilvy is here. Austin?
My name is Mark Randall, and I'm the principal at Southgate Elementary School in Austin.
And we had Redwood Falls, who's also here.
My name is Tom Shelbrick, and I'm the elementary principal at Reed Grade School in Redwood Falls.
Well, welcome to all of you. Oh, I'm sorry. No, please. I'm sorry.
I'm
Renee
Estable, and I'm the reading coordinator at Reed Grade School in Redwood Falls. Wonderful. Rest of the Johnson Curriculum Coordinator
for Redwood Falls. Not going to catch me twice. Anyone else?
No.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for coming. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent, was there one characteristic of all these recipients, for example, not meeting AYP, is that what qualified them to become the select group, or how was the decision made to have such a small selective group? I mean, it must have something to do with Title I.
Superintendent Strand.
I'm going to have to defer that. I think I'll defer it to Stacy.
Can you answer that? Or can you answer yes?
Sure. No.
No, please come up and please introduce yourself for the tape.
I'm Denise Harlos. I'm the Special Services Coordinator in the Shakopee School District. And I'd like to put that answer to that question in a little bit of context. For 3 years prior to even writing the CSR grant in Shakopee, I was working with Pearson Elementary because of their demographic, which put them on the roadmap for a CSR grant. They were about 40% free and reduced lunch. 25% of their students at that time were ELL students. 40% of their students are now ELL students. And this was a very drastic growth change in demographics in Shakopee over just a few years. So the school was really struggling with teachers who used to be teaching other kids, and suddenly they had a lot of different looking children in their classroom and weren't really sure how to attend to that. I like to use the metaphor for the CSR grant of trying to fix the plane while you're flying it. We do get Title I funds, we get Title III funds, and we get funds from the state, and we get LEP dollars from the state. And we have all of those dollars committed to teachers in positions, a certain amount of training, to work as hard as we can with students. What CSR allows the school districts to do, who are really facing student achievement challenges, is to stand back, to take a few staff, to take a very serious look at what the needs are in the building across the whole school process. Teachers, training, tools, parent involvement, district support, etc. It allows you to stand back and do that needs assessment and then look at these reform models that may possibly fit the needs of your building, and these have to be approved by the government. And then do that needs assessment and figure out a plan, a long-term plan, to get the training and the tools and the time that teachers need to get up to speed to really work successfully with their students. Once you get that infusion of $100,000 a year to get staff trained, and typically you're training a couple of facilitators who will be in the building then to continue the training, you get your parents on board, you get your district on board, you start talking about, now how are we going to pull Title I, Title III, LEP funds into this for long-term sustenance, but that CSR money allows you to, for that short period of time, pull this all together. The district does then have to find a way to support the programs long-term, and that is a challenge. But that's how you fix the plane while you're flying it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Have you seen positive results so far? And what model are you using? I heard Panina talk about using a particular model, and that's working well for the Indian children. Now, how about in Shakopee?
We are using the Literacy Collaborative as well. As I said, a couple of years prior to choosing that model, we had already begun with a balanced literacy program in first grade that was showing great improvements. When we did our needs assessment, we also noticed that our kids through their MCA results, we were getting some struggles in math. The reason that we chose the Literacy Collaborative is because Literacy Collaborative also shows that it makes a difference in math achievement. And so that was one model that would address the needs of our population.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Any other public testimony? Well, thank you. This bill will be held over for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance bill. Thank you, Representative Koonin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
We'll now turn to House File 1080, School District Technology Needs Aid. Representative Morgan.
Excuse me.
Representative Morgan, would you like to move your bill for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 1080 for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance omnibus bill.
Representative Morgan moves that House File 1080 be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance bill. Representative Morgan, we'll turn to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House File 1080 is a bill that is designed to address technology needs in school districts throughout the state. It will provide $100 per pupil in the first year and $99 per pupil in the second year of one-time funding for technology and technology training in schools. The idea behind the bill is pretty simple. Throughout the state, we have school districts with different technology needs. I personally believe that those school districts with the teachers, the administrators, the locally elected school board officials, they are the ones who can best determine what their individual school districts' needs are. This bill gives them guidance. It says it must be spent on technology. It must be spent, it's designed to be spent for classroom purposes. And of course, one of the biggest things you'll hear from teachers about technology is we need training. We need to know how to use the equipment. We need to know how to make use of it best in teaching students. So this bill does make sure that this money can be used for technology training for staff if that is what an individual school district deems is most important. We have school districts throughout the state with different levels of needs. When I presented this bill in the E-12 Policy Committee, Representative Welty had spoken about a school in his legislative district that a high school, had a single room of computers. There were about a dozen of them for the whole high school, and he described them as apples. He didn't describe them as Macintoshes. He described them as apples, and that to me says that that school district has certain needs that the school district where I teach doesn't have. But my school district has needs, and I'm sure you all represent school districts that have different levels of need for technology. This bill enables those individual school districts to make the choices that are best for them, to make the decisions based on their needs far better than we could here in St. Paul. Some school districts will spend these on computers and monitors. Some will spend it on software for interactive software in the classroom. Some will spend them on interactive whiteboards. We'll see a presentation from people in Minnetonka here later on with Representative Benson's bill. Some people aren't ready for interactive whiteboards, but some schools definitely are. This bill gives districts the opportunity to make those decisions for themselves. Some of you might be wondering, where did you come up with the amount of money for this bill? Is it enough to meet every school district's need? Well, certainly it's not enough. School districts have great needs in this area. There was method to the amount of money that I came up with. When Commissioner Sieben was here to present the governor's budget, you may recall I asked her a question. There was $38 million in the governor's budget for technology and another $150 million of one-time money in the governor's budget. And I asked the commissioner, I said, school districts are usually not willing to spend one-time money on classroom staff, on staff to add programs to a district or maintain programs or reduce class size or maintain class size. What would you suggest we spend this money on? And she agreed with me that school districts would be unlikely to do that. And one of the things she suggested school districts spend the money on was technology. So I took that recommendation from the commissioner. I added it to the $38 million the governor had already set aside for technology for one-time money in the budget. And that's where we came up with the money in this bill. It does add up to just short of $190 million. And it is one-time money. One of my mentors, if you will, at Burnsville High School, Craig Stoneberg was his name. He was a social studies teacher, but he always told me, beware of gifts that eat. And certainly technology is one of those gifts that eats. There are always needs for upgrades, and technology is always changing, needs are always changing, but I think this will give districts an opportunity to catch up or get ahead in ways that can really help kids learn all over the state. So that's the goal of my bill and the motivation behind it, and I certainly sit for questions.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan, do you know if the department has available data that shows us where the needs are in our school districts, maybe by site or by district? Do you know if that's available?
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't know if there is specific data relating to the districts as far as the needs, technology needs across the state. I don't know if the Department of Education has that available.
Representative Hyde-Gerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this issue has been brought up for a number of times. My understanding is previous to, or since 2001, this has been a local levy. Before that, it used to be state aid. And it's something that I know that we have had much discussion. We did something, I know last year we increased some of the aid per pupil for some of the very, very, very rural districts last year in conference committee. But I'm wondering why, Representative Morgan, my question for you is this, why did you split off from, well, of course I probably can ask a question to the governor, but he's not here. But it used to be the levy is together with career and technical, it's called. And in that is include ag, business, health, occupations, career, and everything else. And I think the concept would be much better, at least received, if all of the components would be back together again. Because right now, the only way school districts can access these funds, Representative Faust in your district, if they wanted to add some new saws in the industrial arts, whatever, they can do a discretionary levy. But right now, we do not have state aid. But I like your bill. I think this is a great idea, but it would be nice if we could tie them all back together where they are right now. Just your thoughts on that.
Representative Morgan, before we begin, I'm just going to remind folks to turn their cell phones and their Blackberries off. We're getting a buzz in the system. So just remind folks to do that. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hyde-Gerken, as a first-termer here, I guess I have little knowledge of the history of things that have gone on over the last few sessions with funding and where things are coming from and where they're going to. I saw the governor decision to put almost $200 million of one-time money into schools as an opportunity to target that money towards a particular need that all schools have throughout the state. And I saw this, my bill, as a way to make sure that every school district had access to those funds for each school in the way they best felt was possible. So I certainly wouldn't be opposed to what you're suggesting. I just see this as another way to get more technology money into classrooms to help kids.
Thank you. Other questions? President Morgan, do you have any testifiers?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any public testimony on this bill? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Representative Morgan. This bill will be held laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
We'll turn next. Yes, Representative Erickson.
Before we go to the next bill, could we have Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom review with us where we've been in regard to what Representative Hyde-Gerken raised, the career and technical, the technology. Could you just give us a little highlights of where we've been? Because I've forgotten, too.
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, in brief on the secondary vocational program, as Representative Hyde-Gerken said, that used to be an all-aid program. It was a cost-based program up until the mid-90s when it was converted over to a per-pupil funding formula. And then not long after, in 2001, that was changed from an all-aid program to a local levy. That's about $13 million per year as an ongoing levy. So in terms of the secondary vocational formula, that's what's currently in place there. We have a separate funding source that derives essentially from what used to be referred to as the TARP program as a technology funding source. This is primarily for online costs, connectivity costs, and that kind of thing. That's built into the base budget as an aid amount. It's based on the school district's actual costs for certain types of technology. Relatively small amount of money. We'll look up real quick and see what that amount is for you. That's an ongoing aid program now that was reestablished 2 years ago that's based on what used to be called the TARP program.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if this is a good question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. This money comes out of a general fund, correct? Mr.
Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, yes, this money would come out of in Representative Morgan's bill, the money comes out of the general fund.
Okay. And how much could be added to the per pupil formula with this amount proposed.
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the amounts that are in there that are added to the formula are $100 per pupil the first year and $99 per pupil the second year.
Okay.
Representative?
So that's just for the 2 years then? For the, okay.
Yes.
I understand.
Chair, Representative, the assumption is that this would spend some of the one-time money. It would not be ongoing funding, but limited just to the 2 years.
Okay.
Representative Hyde-Griffin.
Thank you. Just an afterthought here. Unless I see that we have our chair here, Chair Riley, I'm hoping that we may have some conversation someplace along the line where we're looking at, Representative Dabney has a bill. We have had some bills and the governor's initiatives of having the college courses taught on campus, vocational included. One of the things that we're seeing schools having a difficult time with is the funding mechanism to get these supplies that we need to teach the classes. I'm a representative Wardlow, and in policy referred to that. He had been to one of, I think, Summit School was also testified in Representative Mariani's committee last year. But the problem that they're having is getting the tools to offer the classes. And right now, a lot of school districts are using discretionary levy to do this. But this might be an avenue we can, someplace along the line, look at expanding this idea as well.
Representative Cleveland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hager, and I think it's this is an opportunity. We know that we don't have ongoing money to play around with, but this one-time money with the technology options that we have, there's a lot of good bills on the table, and I think you make very good points that we should discuss how best to use it, but we should definitely take advantage of anything we have that's one-time that can be put into this kind of thing. It might, as Representative Morgan said, it might be something that eats, but, you know, there's the ongoing money really eats.
Mm-hmm. And, Mr. Crowe, you have a further explanation of Representative Erickson's question?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, the current appropriation for the TARP program is $3.75 million per year.
Okay. If there are no other questions, we'll turn to Representative Benson, House File 803. Representative Benson, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 803 to lay, to be held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 bill.
Okay, Representative Benson moves that House File 803 be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance bill. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My bill also draws upon these one-time resources. And it is a pilot program, and you will find in your packets, I think, a fiscal note outlining the expenditures. Because of the limited time and the importance I place on demonstrating this new technology, I'll just make a few brief comments, and then I'll introduce Kim Queenie here, who is an AP physics teacher with Minnetonka High School, who uses this technology in a classroom each day. As many of you on the committee know, and also, like me, have been classroom teachers, through the years, teaching and teachers many times have to change their teaching styles because of the fact that young people entering our schools are changing learners. And we also, along with changing our teaching styles, need to change teaching strategies. And part of that strategy is enhanced through the use of technology. And technology changes rapidly, as we know. And one of the reasons I'm interested in having you see this demonstration today and hopefully including it in the omnibus bill is that I believe we have some technology here which for the first time allows classroom teachers to integrate many of the technologies that have come online over the last many years. And I'm sure those people in business as well as education have found their organizations investing in technologies which provide maybe a partial answer to some of the needs and even many times become obsolete. I think this technology we're about to look at may allow us for the first time to integrate many of these and have a technology that will last over the years. One of the school districts in my house district, Minnetonka, has begun to integrate this technology. And so I'd like to ask Ms. Haney-Hood to make a demonstration and also to discuss what Minnetonka has found about the value of the integrating this new technology.
Ms. Haney, if you'd introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Kim Haney. I'm an AP Physics B teacher at Minnetonka High School. Thank you. We just wanted to share a quick, just a little quick bit about what's going on in our community. We've found technology to be a big accelerator of learning, and the smart board has been a great gateway for our teachers to integrate technology, not just interactive whiteboards, but also digital cameras. And we found that those teachers who have the smart boards in their classroom have actually latched on. Go ahead.
I'll just interrupt there. We're calling this technology interactive whiteboard because there are a number of vendors who sell similar technologies.
Listen.
So those interactive whiteboards have allowed those teachers to be able to integrate a lot of different technologies, and those teachers have been the ones that have had the most enthusiasm and excitement about all the different things that they can incorporate. It's had the most profound impact of any technology that we've introduced into our schools. It also leverages the power of that one classroom computer that a lot of classrooms have. That one computer now becomes an interactive opportunity for all of those kids. In 2001, our community ran a referendum for technology, and we lost that referendum because our community didn't really see what we were trying to buy. And so in 2002, we piloted 11 classrooms with interactive whiteboards across the district. We went out and talked to people and demonstrated the power of the technology, and now we currently have over 200 in our district, which is about two-thirds of our classrooms. And so I wanted to do a very quick demonstration of just a few of the very many things that you could do with interactive whiteboard. Again, it's just a small glimpse, but I just wanted you to have a chance to see that. And so basically, interactive whiteboard is very good. And so we have the direct access to the line of sight, which is very stable. And I can pick up a pen. And since I can put on my overhead transparency or whiteboard, I can go ahead and write my name or any notes that I might want. And now that becomes an object that I can move across that board in the way that I want. It basically runs my computer. It's just a touch screen that runs my computer. One of the uses that I found in my classrooms as a science teacher is being able to integrate Microsoft Word and Excel. And so one of the things we talk to our kids about is scientists don't look just at one set of data. They look at a whole sample of a set of data. And so what the kids will do is, here's an Excel spreadsheet. 6 hours may be different from 5th hour, but we want to look at the class results as a whole across all the hours. So one of the features is the kids can pick up a pen and actually write their data on that board. If you watch on that cell that I clicked on, it's going to put, and that number's a little bit too big. Okay, 716. Doesn't that always work out? Yeah. So that puts the number in, and then the kids can see how that averages across, and it's going to change that graph in real time. As a physics teacher, I love to incorporate video into my classroom. And so another one of the things I like to do is be able to take video clips. We've all maybe seen type of physics textbooks, you know, a bike goes off of a ramp at 100 miles per hour at 30 degrees, all but the maximum height. So now I can find a video clip that has well, what kinds of things can we find out? Maybe we can find out how fast the bike is going, how high they're going up in the air, how fast they enter that van at the end. So when I play that, I pick up the pen and I can freeze that video. Now I'm kind of like John Madden. And we talk about one of the things we need is we need the angle that that biker comes off the ramp at. So I can write over that video, we can tap on all the other things that we need. And what that does is I'm going to put a snapshot of that picture with my writing now into my notebook software. We can go back and play that video one more time, and we can find out that it's in the air for 2 seconds. And so, from the 2 seconds, you have a parabola, so you go the velocity of 0 to 0, you can go through
installed that physics tower. We now offer that video clip of just having you read it out of the textbook. The kids can make their own videos and go out and capture things that they see in the real world, and we can bring it in as well. Then I have the ability to take that and post that onto a federal website. Kids can go home and download that at home. If they were absent or missed something, I can print it off to those kids who were maybe gone. A lot of times I'll have kids who are absent and they'll come back the next day and they're all caught up to speed because they had access to the stuff we did in class the last day. One of the biggest questions is, how does this impact student achievement? That's one of the biggest questions. Personally, I have used a nationally recognized physics education research test developed by physics education experts across the nation called the Forced Motion Concept Evaluation. And basically what that does is it measures Newtonian mechanics. And across the nation, high school, college, they did a what they call a game. If a student scored a 40 on the first test, the pretest, and they could potentially score 100, they have a possible gain of 60, 40 to 100. If they only get up to a 70, they gain 30 out of the possible 60, which means they had a 50% gain. Nationally, high school, college, and all traditionally taught physics classes, the gain is only 10 to 12%. And when I did that in my class, previous to having interactive whiteboards and some other technologies in the lab, our gains for 2 years were 10 to 12%. After having the interactive smart boards and the computers in our labs, our gains went up to 45% the first year, and this year they went up to 51%. So I'm a firm believer that it really can impact student achievement.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And begging your pardon, I didn't get your last name.
Haney.
Haney.
Yep.
I used to ride, but not like that. And one other big question is, do you have the clip of the ambulance coming?
No, <I'm not>. Haney.
Other questions from Ms. Haney? Representative Markport.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Haney, or Representative Benson, what does that cost? What would one unit like that cost? Maybe you said and I missed it.
Well, if you look in your materials, we did get a fiscal note, approximately $4,200 per classroom, I believe is the number that's listed there, yeah. If we spread this out evenly throughout the entire state, we would be able to equip about seven to eight classrooms in every school district. I just might add one of the reasons I thought this would be useful is this technology, I think, has potential to allow school districts that can afford it or implement it to leapfrog other school districts and even help us dramatically to catch up to our international competitors, since we seem to be having difficulty in that regard. And I'm also very concerned that school districts that cannot afford this technology on their own are going to be left behind. And also school districts that are bordering those that do move to this 21st century technology will be under great pressure, I suspect, from their own parent groups who will say, well, why should we stay in this district? Let's move over to the other one. They are really making such dramatic strides here in educational attainment. So I'm concerned that only districts that internally can afford this will get it, and children in school districts who are just as deserving geographically throughout the state ought to have an opportunity. And by spreading this technology around a little, I think it may wake up many school district school boards to the reality of this dramatic change in technology, which they may not have noticed before. And again, this is a one-time expenditure. It could not be put, for example, in the base formula. And I think we ought to consider this in the mix of those technological investments that the state is planning to make.
Representative Temer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Wonderful technology, and I can see why you enjoy using it, Ms. Haney. One question I have, Representative Benson. Representative Morgan talked about you know, putting dollars into technology and letting school districts make choices about how they utilize those dollars toward technology, to where their needs are. In this particular case, you're saying they have to use it for this particular technology.
They may if they choose.
Pardon me?
If they choose to apply for it, yes.
Right. My question was your thoughts regarding the prescriptive nature of saying they have to use this money for whiteboards or for interactive boards as opposed to having technology monies available that it utilize in the way they seem fit, as Representative Morgan suggested.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that point. I'm just, to my argument or response is that this is a technology which has leapfrogged most other technologies. And for school districts, for example, to use the resources, as Representative Morgan suggests, maybe to buy laptop computers for the student in the class, would be an investment they could make, but this technology would allow all the students to participate using a single computer. And it also adds the power of the Internet, and all kinds of, it really integrates all kinds of technologies. And it's such a dramatic departure, I think, from anything most of us have ever seen, that I'm anxious for that reason to allow school districts to participate.
Representative Demo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Benson, I guess I agree. It's great things. I guess, personally, I believe that decision probably would be best with the individual school district. That's just my opinion. It's great stuff. You know, board members, the technology people within the school districts would be aware of those sorts of things. I think it's great stuff. It looks like fun, and I think if we can make learning fun, it becomes relevant, and there's rigor to it. I think it's great. But I, quite frankly, my opinion would be is that I think local districts can make the choice as to where the dollars should go. It's great to be putting this money. It's a great use of one-time dollars for technology, and it's kind of a mute point. It's just a point that went
there. I'd just like to add that this technology also has proven itself to greatly improve student learning outcomes, and I think that's what we need to be concentrating on. And as you know, the governor has a technology proposal, and my modest proposal here is quite small in comparison to the generous proposals others are making.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may comment, you're doing a spectacular job today. My question is looking at the report here. I guess it's somebody's report. We're talking about $4,200 for each unit, and we're going to have an estimated number of classrooms output at 1,877.5, and I'm not even going to comment on the 0.5, but that sounds like, you know, I get the extra half, and I appreciate that. We'll have to share it with somebody, I suppose. But that's, you know, 3 or 4 per district across the state. So are you targeting certain classes that this is going to work better in than others? We saw physics, but, you know, or there's some classes that work better, and so that's what we're targeting, and that's what we're hoping to accomplish, or what's the goal or the thought behind that?
And I each can answer this. My argument is that those districts that get the grant would be able to install them in all the classrooms in their particular building. And then you might discuss the issue of how it's applied to other disciplines.
Ms. Haney.
As a physics teacher, I'm also on special assignment working with technology integration support across the district. And when we first had these in our classrooms, I thought, oh, math and science. But now that I've seen them applied second grade all the way up to high school and art and music in third grade and second grade, it's amazing the applications in all the different areas. In the packet that you have in the folder, there is a DVD of about 7 little video clips of how those technology and interactive whiteboards are being applied in special ed to high school, to math, science, to third grade. So you can take a look at those clips as well and see the different uses across curricular areas.
Representative Walker, did you have a follow-up?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for Ms. Haney, about how much staff development time was involved in being proficient at this, and then how much daily prep time does it take per, I guess, class? I mean, we got 2 or 3 different classes. I can see, you know, getting videos and getting all that. What's the timeline on all that? Because I know a lot with technology is you get a workshop for 2 or 3 hours, and then you're supposed to remember how all that's done, and then, you know, you use it once, and it's, you know, you're back to square one. So how does it work? Because, you know, you're very proficient in what I saw there.
Ms. Haney.
It varies, as it does. I mean, different teachers spend different amounts of time preparing lessons without the technology. We offer a four-hour beginning staff development class for those teachers. Last week when we were here, anyone can come up and write on that board almost immediately. And then you keep learning tips and tricks, and you talk with your colleagues about different ways you can integrate it into your instruction. We do offer ongoing staff development for our teachers. When we put them into our classrooms, we tended to put them into clusters. So maybe it was all third grade teachers at a particular elementary school. And so then they had collegial support as well as the ability to share. And so they were kind of divvying up the workload a little bit. And now because those files are electronic, being able to share them becomes a lot easier. And now when I plan for next year, I can pull up those same files and now add to them and make them even better than they were the year before. So it varies. It takes some time up front, obviously. But again, now it's electronic, and you can just build upon it from year to year.
Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Haney, on a daily basis, then, how much time would you spend doing a class like on this, for example, to put everything together?
Ms. Haney.
Just that little video?
No, well, the whole one-period class that you would end up using.
A lesson?
Yeah.
It depends upon, there's so many variables that go into that, because I don't like to lecture for, 50 or 55 minutes, obviously. But being able to pull together the different multimedia tools that you can go to the internet when you're up there. You can do different vocab strategies and card sorts. I would say if I was going to put that together for my class and the time to find the video clip, which is very fast with the Google video searches we have now. 20 minutes?
Really?
25? I mean, but that's drawing upon teaching it already in previous years without the technology, so I have the ideas that I want to be able to pull together. But if I was starting from scratch on a topic I had never taught, it would take me significantly longer.
Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of for my information, can this be done bilingually?
Ms. Haney.
I'm not sure. Well, I mean, this will work on any computer system, but I'm going to turn that question over, if that's all right, to some of our experts behind us.
Representative Benson, do you have a...
We have other testifiers. Lisa, do you want? Okay.
And if you please introduce yourself before we start.
My name is Jane Kennedy. I'm from Tierney Brothers Audiovisual, and we represent this particular interactive whiteboard, which is the smart board.
What I would like to do is, first of all, I want to say that I happen to be a parent of three students who have gone through the Minnetonka School District, and my last son was part of the integration year in his chemistry class. And the first half of the year, he struggled. When the smart board came in, his learning really changed. And basically what he said to me is, Mom, it just makes it easier to learn.
Wow.
And what you're able to do is the teachers post everything that's critical for the kids to review that happened in class that day on their website. So the kids always know what's critical. They can go to the website at any time, at home, at night, at midnight. Access that information and do the reasoning class that day. So I just say from a parent of kids who have been in the Minnetonka School and going through it, it's been a phenomenal experience for me to see the effect of that on my children. So one of the things I wanted to do today, first of all, I wanted to back up for 1 second and clarify something while I'm thinking of it. The dollar figure of $4,200 was expressed, and I want to clarify this. What that is, it's a totally integrated classroom, the model of which Minnetonka has done. And what Minnetonka has is this model right here. It includes a smart board, a projector in the ceiling, and a distributed sound system in the room. So I just wanted to clarify that, because to answer your question specifically, this piece of gear you're looking at right here, this smart board, is $1,399 for school. The total integrated package of the board, the projector, the cabling, the interface to plug your projector into, that whole package, and the Minnetonka model is about $4,200.
And Ms. Kennedy, I'm sorry to cut you off. I appreciate the clarity, but I am going to return to Representative Dominguez's specific question. Maybe Representative Dominguez, you'd repeat the question.
It has to do with language.
Language. Oh, the smart board is available in 36 languages. And let me just get back for a second to this. One of the things that came up at the meeting last week, there were a lot of statistical questions that came up about where is this used and how many countries use it in the United States. I wanted to address that. But it is available in 36 languages. Smart happens to be a Canadian company. Smart products are in over 100 countries. They serve 50 million students, and they're in over 500,000 classrooms. This is not a new technology. Smart invented this product back in 1991. The first board that was ever used in the University of Ontario is still being used today, and with no additional cost. And what I mean by that is these boards last a long time.
Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. We have other representatives with questions. I'll make sure that they get to ask their questions also if there's any public testimony. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to encourage, if this pilot were to go forward, that teachers in the district, all teachers in at whatever district this was presented in, were fully informed on the product before they started teaching on it. And I say that as an art teacher who has seen two demonstrations of the whiteboard. And multi-processors that we are have been thinking about redoing my lesson plans. We have this technology in the school system that I teach in, but it has been made available to us, the training, through email. Would you like to sign up for this email? And, of course, I'm a master of delete, delete, delete. And so I had not seen this before, even though it was available, so I would hope that if this is offered, that it's extensively promoted in the district so it can really show the results that it could.
Okay. Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman, do you have the teachers in the physical education athletics, do they use the whiteboard? I see Mr. or Representative Garofalo over there stretching and trying to stay loose. Is the physical education teachers utilizing the technology?
Well,
Ms. Kennedy.
Physical education teachers obviously use the traditional kind of teaching as well, but actually the video player that Kim showed earlier, that innovation on the software really came because Smart got so much response from the coaches saying we want to put our plays up there, we want to be able to mark and say we should have gone here and on there. So Smart is continuing to listening to what people, the teachers want. And then changing their software. And I just wanted to also address one thing you said about training. We, over the last 5 years of selling this product line, have found that training is absolutely critical. So at Trinity Brothers, we offer training. We have a full-time or a smart master trainer that can come out to sites and do training, and we also have training that we offer in our offices for individual teachers who can't afford to have training come out, but can come individually. So, we absolutely understand what you're talking about. Training is key to making success of this.
Minicom
is the example of that.
Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. I'm going to make sure to see if there's any public, anyone who wishes to testify for the public on this bill. And Representative Benson, do you have any other testifiers to this bill?
I do not.
Do you need to? Would you like?
Okay. Don't we do it then? Lisa DeLoy? DeLoy?
If you would please state your name.
Hi, I'm Lisa DeRoy, and I'm an education consultant with this particular interactive whiteboard company. Thank you so much for having us here today and allowing us to provide you this information. I would like to say that I am an education consultant specifically for the Twin Cities metro area. What that means is that district schools that come on board with my company, I am able to provide them professional, ongoing professional development that is ongoing. I'm working currently with approximately 50 school districts, and that includes not only in the metro area, but I've been as creative as I can to work with our education co-ops, which a lot of states don't have. And it is so powerful to be able to work with co-ops ask them if they will go ahead and publicize my workshops, my presentations, take care of registration, and I can have a central location where a dozen districts can come together, and I can share with them, and I can teach them, and I can come up to a higher level so that we're effectively using the board and seeing outcomes. Basically, what I wanted to say to you today is I am a resource. I am not a one-shot deal. I'm not a trainer. I'm an educator. I've used the boards before. If this goes through and the Department of Education takes this over, I'm already a resource for them, as I am a resource for our co-ops and our districts who have this technology.
Well, thank you. As a resource, Ms. Doerr, maybe I'll ask if members have any questions for you. Seeing no other questions, no one else to testify. Representative Benson, your bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 finance bill.
Just make a last statement.
Please.
Just real quickly, I want to make sure that we're concentrating on the technology here, and that we emphasize the idea of allowing this type of technology to get out into greater Minnesota as well as the metro area. And I would just like to conclude by saying, if things don't work out so well in a couple of years, I may have to go to districts like Minnetonka and see if I can get employed. I would just love to get my hands on that, because I used to play around with the technology that they had in the old days, shortly after electricity was introduced, and I went to it like a duck to water, and so this is this looks like such an exciting, fun thing to really give individual teachers an opportunity to innovate.
Well, as a teacher myself, I know I'm sitting here like Representative Brown thinking, how would I use it in the classroom?
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Before we adjourn, I'd like to remind members for tomorrow evening, for those going to St. Croix, to please let Shannon know if you have a meal choice, and also to pay for your meal. Thank you very much, and we stand adjourned.